Welcome, members and guests, to the December 20th meeting of the City Club of Eugene. Welcome to our KLCC listeners and our TV audiences on Community Television and the Oregon Wind Network. I'm Marty Wilde, City Club President. Our sponsors today are Sacred Earth Botanicals, KLCC, Gatos Churnside and Balthrop, and a special thank you to KLCC for airing our programs on Monday night and to KPFF Consulting Engineers for our office space. We thank you for listening. These programs are free for our listening audience, yet there are costs involved. Your contribution is completely tax deductible and will help keep our organization healthy. If you act now with a donation through the Oregon Cultural Trust, you may have your contribution matched and receive up to a $500 tax credit. Welcome to our new members, John Borofsky and David Funk. Thank you also to the organizer of today's program, John Belcher. And without further ado, we'll invite Dan Bryant up, the MC of our program.
So as 2013 comes to an end, we have saved the best program for the last, and I'm glad you're here. Our program committee has chosen 10 different community members from different walks of life to offer a virtual gift to the city of their choice. It may be whimsical, serious, offbeat, ironic, amusing, challenging, whatever they would give if, by the power of that great mystical elf of the north, they had the power to do so. The only limitation is time, ours. They have just 5 minutes to bestow this wonderful gift upon us. So to get us in the spirit, I offer you this slightly plagiarized gift with apologies to Clement Clark Moore. 'Twas the week before Christmas when all through the city not a politician was running, not even Kitty. The effigies were hung throughout Kesey Square in hopes that Occupy would soon be there. The ducks were all nestled snug in their beds with visions of sugar bowls dancing in their heads. When out on the lawn there rose such commotion, look, it's Marcus Mariota with D'Anthony in motion. The quad was all filled with new-fallen snow, the better to fight against friend or with foe. Students poured out from all of their halls, pelting bystanders and professors with icy snowballs. All would be forgiven if it hadn't been viewed by 5 million viewers on that dang YouTube. And if that wasn't enough for distractions, now we have Civic to divide us in factions. If only we could find a deep pocket buyer who will stop the bulldozer of the Y or Fred Meyer. Then, to my amazement, did suddenly appear St. Phil himself in Nike full gear. With a wink, he turned and gave a full Monty. Alas, no knight at all, it's just Paul Conti. More rapid than rabbits, the counselors they ran, eager to disappear like a shopping bag ban. Come Clark, come Taylor, come Zelenka and Polling. Now Evans and Brown, all watch how you're voting. You know you can't hide, though I know you will, in Capstone, Corcampus, or maybe Whoville. So we gather this day to share gifts of the season, for when we know not the rhyme or the reason, for whether we be gay, straight, slug queen, or elves, we still have to learn to laugh at ourselves. This is Eugene. We believe in true fairness. No one is wrong when you have political correctness. And just when we think we got it all right, shouts Megyn Kelly, remember Santa, like Jesus, is white. Shocking, said Pope Francis. How could we be so foolish? We didn't know Santa, like Jesus, is Jewish. So you heard it first here, and now in this spirit of interfaith relations, our first speaker giving his gift today will be my good friend Ibrahim Hamida, who is the perpetual human rights activist and Muslim elder of our community, born and raised in the town of Bethlehem, appropriate in this season that he comes to us. Ibrahim left the West Bank after the Six-Day War, came here to Eugene to attend the University of Oregon, and he has been working on reconciliation issues between Israelis and Palestinians ever since. He is a human rights commissioner for the city of Eugene, and of course, chef and owner of Cafe Soraya and Dahlia on Broadway. He has received awards from the Eugene Human Rights Commission, from the Eugene Police Department, and Catholic Community Services. I'm pleased to welcome Ebe to the podium. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Dan is always a tough act to follow. And if that's not tough enough, the task itself is tough. What would you give a city that has everything, right? But I'll make an attempt. There is a, coming at you is a unsorted basket of stuff. So I trust that you can do the sorting yourselves, right? So being from the Mediterranean, right now what I wish for Eugene, and you know that is self-serving, is rain and 40 degree weather. That would be really good. This minus 2 degrees and 6 degrees is a little too much for my blood. Also, I'd like one more snowplow, please. I live in the hills. And of course, I wish to give Eugene a big bag of money, right? We could do something with the money, right? How about schools and potholes and maybe some business development funds? Also, I've written down a downtown. I'd like to give Eugene a downtown. I know we're trying. And I'd like to give Eugene another term for kitty. And maybe peace between bicycles and cars. Is that possible, you think? It's this season, right? And diversity. I know it's a bumper sticker in Eugene. I'd like it to go beyond bumper sticker. This next one, I think, has my wife's touches on it. It says, flush toilets at the country fair. Manufacturing jobs. Birkenstocks, but it didn't say more or less of them. And this one is from my heart. To make Eugene a human rights city. Looking at things with that prism makes our life, I think, richer and more meaningful. Also something else, another infatuation other than the Oregon Ducks and the Saturday market. Also, I'd like to give Eugene a seat on the fence that's not so comfortable. You know, we sit and debate downtown forever in Civic Stadium and others, and sometimes I think we're getting just too comfortable on procrastinations. So, and maybe another swimming pool. Amazon is really crowded for kids in the summer. And one more thing, and that one is really to the world, not just Eugene. And it is what I would maybe call appropriately at this time the Mandela model, the Nelson Mandela model. And that is forgiveness and knowing how to turn enemies into friends, into partners, into people you can work with, and the lessons of tolerance, of coexistence, and reconciliation. That's it. The reconciliation. There is no way we can go through our lives without having issues with one another, whether between a husband and wife, or in a city, or a state, or a country, or the world. But if we learn to reconcile our differences, I think we'll have a nicer world. Thank you, and Merry Christmas to all.
Thank you, Ebe. I don't know if he left any gifts under the tree for anyone else. But keeping in the spirit of inclusion, we have with us Dr. Yvette Alex Asenso, who is the University Vice President for Equity and Inclusion. She has the responsibility for collaboratively leading the University of Oregon's efforts to embed inclusion, equity, and diversity in its institutional practices, policies, and norms. Yvette has earned both a JD and a PhD in political science. I didn't even know they had a JD in political science. And was a Fulbright scholar in Croatia. So we very much welcome Yvette to the City Club as well as to Eugene. Come on up.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon.
You actually look very nice and satisfied as you're enjoying your meal. So I really thank you for the invitation to be here today to participate in this wonderful program of gift giving. Today I want to share with you my gift of grace, the gift of grace. Since my family and I moved here in August of 2012, we have been the recipients of various forms of amazing grace from our neighbors and communities and generous residents that we've not even known. We are thankful for that grace, and in the spirit of recycling, I offer it to all of you today for lifetime use and sharing. I offer this gift of grace for you to enjoy in my capacity as a private citizen, not in relation to my job as a professor or as the vice president for equity and inclusion at the University of Oregon, as those are separate formalities that I fulfill on campus. The gift of grace that I offer here today is one of the most important gifts that I received as a child from my parents, who simply assured me that grace was free, unmerited, and undeserved. They demonstrated it in the daily acts of love, kindness, and forgiveness that I certainly did not deserve as a child, and also as a know-it-all teenager. This gift of grace is often imparted to me in the actions of my husband and my two sons, who extended to me daily in my role as a wife and a mother as I bumble along trying to figure out how to fulfill those important responsibilities. What a gift. As many of you know, grace is the power that people have to look beyond someone's imperfections and see their special qualities and needs. Grace is also the resource that Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., India's nonviolent advocate Gandhi, and former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt used to demonstrate in the context of love and determination in the face of misunderstanding, scorn, and hate. They are all recipients of grace. All of us also know and agree that banking institutions, financial institutions, our local campus libraries, and our libraries in the city often give grace periods. We've witnessed the fall of many people from grace, and some of us ourselves have fallen from grace. We've been wowed by the gracious performances of talented musicians, dancers, and actresses, and we've also heard teachers explain what grace is, and we've enjoyed various songs that extol the virtues of grace. Now, although grace is free and it's either undeserved or unmerited, it's difficult to give, and it's often difficult to receive, because in this world, the world in which we live today, there's so many reasons for us to ignore the genuine gift of grace or even to respond to it. An example is our current political environment, whereby grace is glaringly absent in the political gridlock of Congress. Where unkind words and divisiveness rule the day, in the hostility of our electorate, in our political world, both in the United States and abroad. This kind of ungracious behavior is actually becoming the new norm. It's also absent in many times across the color line when people judge people, others, based on their ignorance, as opposed to understanding the blessing that different cultures and races and ways of thinking bring. That is indeed why I'm here to offer the gift of grace, because it is a gift that has the potential to transform all of us by doing just that. We have the capacity to transform the world. Grace, therefore, has the power to shape us. It has the power to strengthen us. It has the power to soften us. It has the power to allow us to see the world in a way that we are unaccustomed. Indeed, grace is the ingredient that encourages us to work across the aisles of difference, whether it's political, personal, spiritual, to find common ground, Grace is the ability to see the good in people despite their heritage, nationality, cultural background. Grace, above all, is the resource of standing firm on our own moral codes while also reaching out to understand those who may be lost in their own moral morass. In today's society, the gift of grace should be the ability to see the hurt and pain in the lives of coworkers, of family members, of an erratic or disoriented driver who's blowing his horn at us, a rude stranger, as well as a neighbor, to provide tender, loving care in response. Grace means being empathetic and in the process to accept other people's gifts, even if they're imperfect. Finally, the gift of grace should also provide us with the ability to see ourselves as the masterpieces that we were made to be and to live every day in that perspective. So at this juncture, I'll conclude my gift of grace by bestowing upon you and sharing with you words from the indomitable Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who reportedly wrote the following words on the wall of an orphanage in India, where she lived, worked hard, and eventually died. These words state, and I quote, "People are often unreasonable, irrational, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people may accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are selfish, you will win some unfaithful friends. If you are successful, you will win some unfaithful friends and some genuine enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and sincere, people may deceive you. Be honest and sincere anyway. What you spend years creating, others could destroy overnight. Create it anyway. If you are if you find sincerity and happiness, some may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. Give the best you have. It will never be enough. Give your best anyway. And the final analysis is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway." End of quote. Thank you for the gift of grace.
Thank you, Yvette, for that gift of grace. And so now, having heard from the administration at the university, we turn now to the faculty. Greg McLaughlin is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Oregon, where he teaches and writes about urban history and policy, sustainable cities, and social justice issues. He has served on several city committees dealing with downtown planning and revitalization, and since 2003 has served as an advisor to Mayor Kitty. Greg?
Thanks for that introduction, Dan, and it's really a pleasure to be here. City Club has been an organization that's been a central feature of our city for some years now, and it's a wonderful opportunity, and you play a critical role in our community in terms of bringing us together to discuss and debate and deliberate some of the big topics of our time, both nationally, statewide, and locally, so thank you. I'm going to do a little regifting today, which is a good Eugene tradition. Many of you may be aware that we were, I think, the first city in the United States to start curbside recycling in the early 1970s. And for some 40 years, we've been recycling our stuff to each other ever since and regifting our stuff to each other. So it's a good Eugene tradition. And when I was first invited by Marty to give some brief remarks today, I thought, what gift could I possibly offer Eugene? I mean, we have an amazing community here where we are given gifts every day by literally hundreds, if not thousands, of our fellow residents and citizens. And so I thought for a moment, well, what better to do than to re-gift some of those gifts and to do it in a way that allows us to think about the amazing level of activism and social commitment we have in our midst among our fellow citizens and residents. I'm thankful for the gifts given by these folks. And when I think of gifts to our city, I think about the work of organizations like CALC, Community Alliance of Lane County, Centro Latino Americano, the NAACP, organizations that have made social justice, tolerance, and nonviolence central to their work in our community, and who've extended a welcoming hand to new residents and people of color in our city. I'm thankful for the good work of Beyond Toxics and Bring Recycling and the permaculture activists who've worked so hard to ensure we have clean air and clean water and who've taught us how to grow much of our own food and recycle our material goods in a sustainable manner. I'm thankful for the dedication of the parks volunteers, the stream teams, and nearby nature who help preserve our green spaces and natural areas, making Eugene a city of environmental responsibility as well as of great beauty. I thank and think of our cycling and neighborhood activists who help ensure we have safe streets for pedestrians and bikes and livable neighborhoods that really give us an amazing sense of identity of place in Eugene. And then there's the impressive work of SLEEPS, Opportunity Village Eugene, and the Eugene Springfield Solidarity Network, who remind us that a safe place to sleep is a basic human right and that there are ways it can be done, and that all people who work deserve a living wage so that they can live dignified lives and put a roof over their head and feed their families. Sometimes some of these activists and fellow residents are a little edgy. Sometimes they can be in our face a little bit. They can be persistent. But, you know, if we think about it, social change has never come about overnight, and it's never come about if there wasn't persistence and a determination of conviction behind it. And so we should welcome our fellow residents, our fellow citizen activists, when they are in our face and when they point out over again that an injustice needs to be remedied in our community. There's the folks at Women's Space and the volunteers in our faith communities and at White Bird Clinic who shelter and support those at risk from domestic violence or exposed to winter's cold or who are without resources and in need of medical care. And I think of all the volunteers, the amazing number of volunteers on our city committees and commissions, the Planning Commission, the Human Rights Commission, the Sustainability Commission, the Budget Committee, who give countless hours to help make our city a better place and give us great ideas and visions for the future. And there are, of course, so many more. What kind of city would we be without the amazing work of those at United Way, Food for Lane County, and St. Vincent de Paul? So my regift to Eugene today is just to make a simple wish that we all of us, at one time or another, join in the kind of work that makes a city something more than the sum of its parts. You know, Oregon Governor Tom McCall perhaps described this work the best when he said some years ago, and I quote, "Heroes and heroines," I would add, "are not giant statues framed against a red sky. They are citizens who say, this is my community and it's my responsibility to make it better." Happy holidays, Eugene. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg, for regifting to us what we already have. And so now we give the last word from the university, appropriately enough, to a student. Edith Gomez is a second-year student at the University of Oregon. She's studying pre-education and hopes to become an educator. She's currently working for 4J's AVID program as a tutor. Edith, please give us your gift.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, it's my first time using this tablet to give a speech, so I'm kind of getting used to it. So, all right, so my gift to the city of Eugene is the gift to be free of the bystander effect. It has always been my belief to act in the interest of justice. I bring forward this gift because as I was in the Boy Scouts parking lot waiting to leave the Civil War game, I found myself witnessing a dilemma that was unnecessary and escalating. Oh, sorry. A man had moved a boulder in order to cut through the grass with his car so that he could get to an exit quicker. And as the man drove into the grass, he soon realized that there was no way out, so he would have to turn around and wait with the rest of us. So as he turned around, another man took it upon himself to return the boulder back to where it was and block the driver, so he couldn't get back into the parking lot. So as you can imagine, the driver got out of his car and moved the boulder again. But as he was getting back into his car, the man put it back. So I was sitting in the car watching the whole thing, and I thought, okay, maybe they're friends and they're playing around or something. And when the man came back out, I noticed that the driver had his son in his car, and he was a young boy, and the boy looked really worried. So it was then that I realized, okay, so maybe someone else will, like, you know, who's out there will jump in and say, hey, you know, let's just move the boulder. Well, no one was doing that. So I got out of the car and asked my boyfriend's dad to help me move the boulder. And as soon as we started moving the boulder, other people around us started to help and diffuse the situation. And eventually the man was able to get back into the parking lot. So the bystander effect is a social psychological phenomenon where that refers to cases in which individuals do not offer any means of help to a victim when other people are present. So in other words, like, the greater the number of bystanders, the less likely it is that any one of them will help. And this is due to diffusion of responsibility. So kind of like the thoughts that I was having of, oh, someone else will do something if it's really bad. It's like, that's what it's referring to. So findings suggested that in cases of an emergency, when people believe that there are other people around, they are less likely or slower to help a victim because they believe someone else will take responsibility. So this is why my gift to the City of Eugene is to be freed of the bystander effect. And one way of doing that is just being aware of your surroundings. I think it's easy to say, oh, it's none of my business, you know, they're having their own ordeal. But I believe that if it's in a public setting, we should, as a community, we should really look out for each other. And if we see something escalating, kind of step in and say, hey, is everything all right? So that's my city to, not, no, that's my gift to the city. Sorry. All right.
So thank you, Edith. So now it's official. You are no longer a bystander, thanks to that gift coming to us from Edith. And a frequent delight of our program each year has been a voice from the youth of our community, and we're pleased very much to have Mikayla Pruitt with us today, who is the student member on the board at 4J. She is a senior at Echo High School, and I just learned that Echo stands for early college and career options. I'm looking at Eliza. I got that right. Early college and career options. So, Mikayla, please give us your gift.
Hi, thank you for having me. My gift to Eugene is Echo High School. Echo is an alternative high school that helps you get your diploma, but also helps you to see yourself at 25 and helps you push to be better and then see where you want to be at 25. It also helps with you going to college and their support system for kids who don't have that. Without Echo, myself and a lot of other students wouldn't be graduating high school, and we also wouldn't have the opportunity to go to college. Because with Echo, they help pay for your first year of college if you graduate from them. So a lot of students are taking that, and with being with Echo, they see themselves as being able to get a degree and don't see themselves as someone who's just not going to be able to do this. And they see themselves as, oh, I want to do this career. We can do it with the support of Echo and the staff. So without Echo, I feel as if Eugene wouldn't have as great of people in the community, because with Echo, we'll be able to better benefit the community and be better people in the community. So Echo helps students who don't have that financial or support system with their families. Thank you.
Thank you, Mikayla. And now we turn from education to the other heart of any city, the business world. George Rohde is the owner of Euro Asian, the Auto House, and Stadium Automotive. And if you need a board member for your organization, George is your guy. He is a member of the Center for Community Counseling Board, the Jazz Station, the Eugene Police Citizens Board, the Police Commission, and he is the president of McKinsey Personnel and the Eugene Springfield Youth Orchestra, just to name a few things that he's doing. And plus, he has passions like tennis and home remodeling and home automation, travel, cooking, entertaining, and gardening. And he's the past president of Southtown Rotary and the recipient of the Oregon Ethics and Business Award from last year. So welcome, George. Please give us your gift.
Actually, what he didn't say is I'm joining BA, Boards Anonymous. Hi, my name is George Rohde. My gift to the city of Eugene, and by the way, I love Eugene. Eugene is such an incredible city. I love the diversity. Sustainability is a very, very important thing. And in sustainability in business means you balance your finances. If you don't balance your finances and you spend more than you earn, something bad happens. You no longer can provide services. So I want to talk about balance, the balance of Eugene to make continue to make this a wonderful city. And for every balance, now I'm a businessman, it's the good, the bad, the ugly, and we always look at the financials. Financials are very important. You look at the income, you look at the outgo, and if you have a positive, you go, yeah, and if we have a deficit, you go, ooh, that's not good. Looking at the income of Eugene, where does our income come from? It comes from property taxes, the majority of it, about 73%. And looking at property taxes, there's something real interesting that happens in property taxes. And we'll talk about that. One of the things about property tax, the best person to pay property tax is anybody who makes a profit. Businesses. Businesses get the privilege of not only paying your property tax, but they have something called personal property tax. And this is an interesting thing. It's anything that you make your income with. Attorneys have to pay income on their books, their desks, their file cabinets. I pay on all the equipment. So they kind of, you know, put into the coffers, which is great because that continues to make this a wonderful city to work in, to live in, to enhance people's lives. And then we get down to, you know, the outgo. By the way, services in Eugene, just the police and fire, they do incredible services. Could you imagine a city without police and fire? We've got to have those essential services. We've got to have, we don't have to, but it makes it a wonderful city to have incredible parks. And while we're on the thing of parks, parks are an interesting area that I'll go on to talk about. Now, there are what you call push organizations. And by the way, as you can see, I'm on the board of many nonprofits. And nonprofits, I believe, are essential for running or for making a city a wonderful place. The downside of nonprofits, I love St. Vincent de Paul. They do incredible work here. There's $23 million off the tax rolls. I don't know if anyone is aware of that, but nonprofits don't pay property tax. And I'm looking for balance there. How much do you not have on the books, and how much do you have on the books? Now, if we had a surplus of income in Eugene, if everything was fine, then we wouldn't worry about it at all. Then you have another really interesting thing. Negative cash flow. And these are, now this is a sensitive subject, I love our parks. Every time you have a park or produce a new park, what do you get? You get no property tax out of it, but you also have the other side of it costs maintenance to do that. And by the way, I love our parks. I'm not saying taking away any parks, but keep that in mind when we say, hey, we need a new park. I agree with somebody, we need new swimming pools. When I was first in Eugene, we used to have one at 17th and Jefferson. It's gone now. What happened? Our city's growing and we have less swimming pools. So I'm not saying take away parks, but there's got to be some kind of balance in parks. Another one, and this is a little bit of a sensitive subject, and yes, I'm a little fearful talking about it, but I'm just going to hit it. Civic Stadium. Let's talk about Civic Stadium. Okay, so Civic Stadium, and I love Ibs' thing about sitting on the fence. You can say it makes no sense. That's an old Rolling Stones song, if you remember. But sitting on the fence, here this piece of property, no matter where it goes, in the last 2 or 3 years while we're in decision-making, I have found decisions don't get any easier to make in time. They seem to get more difficult. So Civic Stadium is a great example. Even if you want to restore it, it's been deteriorating for the last two years. If we sell it to a profit, we're not getting taxes. We'll get taxes on that. That's gone away. Oh, the 4J school district doesn't want the $5 million. We'll just get it later. It makes no sense. But if the city buys the Civic Stadium for another park, and by the way, I love parks. There's one right across the thing. They're great. Balance is what I'm looking for. If it buys it, not only do you not have it on the tax rolls, but to be able to restore that, I mean, kerjing, that's going to take really, really the big bucks. Then you have the maintenance. That's what I call a triple whammy for negative cash flow. Another real sensitive area. So parks are great. We've got to have them, but let's have balance. And the YMCA, by the way, I lived at the YMCA for 15, 20 years of my life. I love the YMCA. That would be better than the city buying this money hole. Speaking of where we get our things, we have an incredible road system here, and we pay for it with gas tax. So bicycle lanes, they get it free. Just looking for the balance. I would love to have everything. I'd love to have the cash funds to be able to provide everything that the city of Eugene wants, but I know the balance. I can't afford it. Thank you.
Thank you, George, for restoring balance to our city.
You are tuned to KLCC Eugene 89.7, 90.5 KLCO Newport, KLFR Reedsport 89.1, and at 88.1 KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, and on the web at klcc.org.
From the business community, we have our own Marilyn Milne, who is a PR diva and local activist. Marilyn is a longtime observer of life in Eugene. She's a communicator, an entrepreneur, and a volunteer. She also likes to drive, which might have something to do with her choice of a gift for her gift for the city. Marilyn?
Well, thank you. When I was asked to give a gift, I didn't even have to think for a moment about what it would be, because over the years of living and driving here, I have developed a theory about driving and citizen participation. So when it became my turn to give, I ran right out and got a stick shift. Yes. This is an actual shifting mechanism from GNR Auto Wreckers Pick Apart. You find them on Highway 99 north of Airport Road. Thank you very much, guys. It's from a 1970s era four-cylinder Chevy pickup. So why a stick shift? I have four reasons. First, somebody already gave a turn signal a couple of years ago, so we don't need that car part for the city. Second, if you know how to drive a stick shift car, you really know how to drive. I believe that everyone at some point should drive a stick shift car at least once, if for no other reason that they know how ridiculously easy it is to drive an automatic transmission. The third reason for my gift, it's harder to use a cell phone when you're your arms and hands are already doing this dance, and it's hard to get your neck involved. And anyway, I believe a manual transmission could save a ton in tickets, car repairs, and heartaches. There's a fourth reason why everyone should drive a stick shift, and fair warning, here's where I get all English major kind of metaphor, bad pun kind of thing. So listen to what this stick shift stands for. Hands-on, people. Hands-on. See, with the stick shift, you are actively driving. You are definitely involved. You constantly gauge how the car is doing and anticipating when you'll need to put in the clutch. And even when you don't want to be bothered with shifting, you still gotta do it. Kind of like volunteering for yet another committee or good cause. When people gear up, when they step up or even step in it, they are saying that they care. They want Eugene to be the best it can be. Okay, more analogies. If you try to coast with a manual transmission, you'll lose momentum, the engine will lug, you'll stall out. That's no way to treat a car or a city. Now, some people in Eugene do understand how to drive stick shift cars. Some of them are in this room. You know the people I'm talking about. They're at the meetings, the open houses. They write so many letters to the editors of our papers, you'd be forgiven for thinking they're a regular columnist. They may grind gears occasionally, but they keep driving, driving towards their vision, their goals, their city. You might also be thinking, more? She wants more participation? And it's true that I've sometimes thought that some of the drivers could take a little break. But the answer isn't to put up a stop sign for them. It's to know that we have the green light to get out there too. So yes, I do want more participation. The rest of us need to shift. We need to take our foot off the brake, put in the clutch, get in gear, and get going. Thank you.
Now that was quite a shift for the gifts of the city, indeed. And I've been to some of those meetings where we really need a clutch, grinding of the gears, yeah. So from an expert in communication, we turn now to an expert communicator. Rick Dancer, former anchor for KEZI News, left news reporting in 2008 to try newsmaking as candidate for Oregon Secretary of State, which is how he discovered he can cause more trouble on the outside than trying to be on the inside. And now he owns his own media service companies and has a television show called creatively Rick Dancer TV. Wow, yeah, that's great, Rick, yeah. Most distinguished, of course, as the former president of City Club of Eugene. So, Rick, welcome back to that podium, which we know gave you so much joy and satisfaction. Please, give us your gift.
It is really fun to be back and wear my little Rick Dancer, and it says on their past president. So that was good times. And I think it was 10 years ago I came here. I was asked to come here as a news anchor and give a gift to the city of Eugene, and I gave the free lunch program, which was if you think you don't like an African-American, take an African-American to lunch. If you don't like someone who's gay, take a gay person to lunch. And it was really fun. It was like, I use it still today because it was such a great metaphor. So today I'm going to do something that's post running for office, post being the TV news dude, and just kind of Rick Dancer, the non-Republican, new registered, non-affiliated voter, which even though people will not let me lose the R, I don't have the R anymore, but you can still give it to me if you want because it doesn't matter. I don't care. Here's my gift to the city of Eugene, a new public eye. I've lived most of my life in the public eye, so I understand the narrow vision that often comes from this point of view. The public eye is you. The public eye is me. The public eye rarely sees 20/20, and as the years add up, the vision can fade and become in dire need of correction. Our public vision is too far to the right and too far to the left. We need vision that sees all sides, but it has to start in the middle. As I say these words, the public eye recoils. It smiles, but deep inside it believes it has the better vision. It has the right vision. It can see just fine. It is everyone else who is blind. It is that denial that just rose in some people's belly that leads to blindness and convinces the experts that a simple pair of glasses or stronger contact lenses will do absolutely no good. The problem is deeper. The problem is bigger. The problem is we don't want to see it. The public eye will need to be removed and replaced. What will this new vision in the public's eye be? The new public eye will see ideas over agendas. It will look for people before programs. It will say, what is best for all of us? Not my constituents, not my business, not my political party, not my way of life, not my pocketbook. This new public eye will see the need for both sides, for all sides, and will reject haughtiness at all costs. This new public eye will be colorblind, not just say it is. It will see not the disability, only the people with different abilities. It will refuse to put down and instead lift up, even if it means losing a battle, even if it means admitting you're wrong or might be. This new public eye will not put up with violence against women, violence against children, or anyone else for that matter. A public eye that will decide to truly end silence surrounding intimate partner abuse. It won't select certain groups of people to devalue: Jews, Christians, Muslims, gays, and lesbians. Oh, and not even Republicans. And if you laughed at that one, your vision may be more deteriorated than you think. You may actually have what a lot of people have today: acute public vision glaucoma. The new public eye will admit and realize it has a stick the size of an old-growth log sticking out of it, making it a poor judge of the vision of others. The eye is the window to our soul. And right now, soul searching is nearly impossible. The public eye can't see well enough past itself to actually search the depth of a soul. The public says it wants change. The public needs to find its voice. But without corrected vision, without a vision that sees beyond our desires and what we think should happen, the public eye is nothing more than a glass eye. A public eye, a new public eye, a new vision. That's the Eugene I look forward to in the future. That's the Oregon I think that we can go back to. That is the place that I want to call home. My gift to you, the people of Eugene and beyond, a new public eye. Now, let the gouging begin. Thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Rick, for that eye. And now, speaking of trouble on the outside, no one in this community knows that subject better than our next gift giver, Allie Valkyrie. Allie is a young activist and community organizer whose focus is on homelessness as a civil rights issue. She is the director of the Nightingale Collective, a nonprofit organization that provides support and advocates for those affected by poverty and homelessness. She was honored to receive the title of Best Hellraiser from the Eugene Weekly last month, but also looks forward to the day when activists no longer have to raise hell in our community over inequality. We welcome Allie once again to this podium. Allie?
Hello? Okay. So I want to thank you, first of all. This is an honor. I like giving gifts. And so I was asked to give a gift, and I want to think about it. So I went for a walk, and it's a walk I take very often, up Lincoln Street towards Skinner's Butte. And I stopped at the moment at the historical marker that's right at the foot of the butte near the climbing wall. The marker is the place where Skinner put his first cabin, and legend says that the Kalapuya told Skinner to build his cabin there because it was above the high water line. And so I stood there at that mark looking at all the houses below, and I realized, all the houses are below that magic spot, that specific elevation that the indigenous people warned us not to build below. That was rather short-sighted, I thought to myself. But then when I thought further, I realized that myopic decisions seem to be a running theme in this town. And while there's surely no urban enclave free of such consequences, these myopic tendencies seem to be a real part of the landscape here. And whereas it makes good fodder for poking fun at, it's not really in our best interest. And so my gift to the city is a cure for myopia. I'm not sure what really causes it. It might be something in the water, or perhaps not in the water, because, you know, fluoride itself could arguably be classified as myopic decision. It's definitely a job creator within the dental industry, but perhaps an undiscovered side effect of fluoride is that it aids in long-term visioning. I do want to stress that these tendencies are by no means confined to the bureaucracy. It's not just city officials or planners. I don't want to put the fault on them. It's very much present in the ideas and the actions of the residents, businesses, real estate developers, especially the real estate developers. The gods of myopia are currently hovering over phase two of the Capstone project, over the future site of the core campus project, or any of these other plots of land that have been scooped up by short-sighted businessmen who don't seem to realize that the bubble's about to pop. Historically speaking, myopic development projects have haunted this area for several generations now. We built the largest shopping mall between San Francisco and Portland less than 2 miles from our downtown core. We built the state's largest football stadium in the middle of a former Oxbow Lake on top of a landfill. We built a hospital with a state-of-the-art level 2 trauma center on the bank of a river that has being held back by 21 dams. hold on a second, I just moved my thing. Speaking of earthquakes, we built a city hall that was shuttered after only 48 years of use because its architects failed to consider earthquakes when designing its infrastructure. That one really kills me because we were well aware in the early 1960s that we were living in a subduction zone. But we're even more well aware today, and it still doesn't make a difference. I see well-meaning groups of citizens that wish to build co-housing projects on riverfronts and floodplains without any real due consideration about earthquake risk and failing dams. I see us forever pouring money into a riverfront urban renewal district with, again, no thought of the earthquake risk or the fact that only a little over 100 years ago, the land we would have considered riverfront was north of Autzen. If the Willamette were ever to return to the original course it flowed when the town was first founded, your riverfront renewal district will now be centered around the current path of the 105. But back to the cure. History reflects the problem, but history contains solutions. And I've maintained that knowing one's history is the strongest antidote to some of these short-sighted tendencies. Not only embracing our history, but really, really studying it and looking at it and understanding how it affects us right now. For example, many people recognize that Eugene's short-sighted enthusiasm about downtown urban renewal in the 70s is partially responsible for a present downtown that does not fit our needs. However, we understand this in concurrence with the approval and development of projects like Capstone, which future developments will no doubt see as a consequence of myopia. I think that evaluating our current goals and priorities with more an awareness of our history, specifically our stumbles and our follies of the past, will do wonders long term for the future of this city. And I think that a little fluoride wouldn't hurt either. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Allie. And no surprise, her gift leaves us with a challenger, too. And so now we come around to where we began. Our last word goes to our dear Kitty Indeed, mayor of our fair city. Kitty Piercy is a former teacher and state legislator, currently in her ninth year as mayor of Eugene. Will her gift include four more? I don't know. But in addition to mayoral duties, she co-chairs the Oregon Passenger Rail Committee and RAIN, the Regional Accelerator Innovation Network for the governor. She is a good friend to many of us and advocate for all of us. Mayor Kitty.
Well, I don't know about the four, but you're stuck with me for at least three. So, perhaps it was my first year as mayor, about 9 years ago, that I came to this event. A former mayor was one of the gifters, and his gift to our city was a stocking full of lumps of coal. By lore, that gift is given to those who've been bad and deserve nothing. My gift to the city today holds many things, but no coal whatsoever. Inside the package is a gift for us all to be able to see and appreciate the beauty of this community and all its people, to see how fortunate we are with our rivers, our trees, our buttes, our parks and neighborhoods. It is a kind of vision that allows us to see the good that people bring to their work and play. It is the kind of vision that allows each of us to see beyond our differences, to discover our similarities. Inside the package is the gift of the ability to appreciate risk, to know that we cannot always be safe and protected from the chance that we might fail. Instead, we have to give others and ourselves the support to dream, to invent, to try, and yes, to make mistakes and get up and try some more. We can cheer for success rather than predict failure. trying builds confidence and enables us to step beyond the ordinary, to test our imaginations and our capacities to be leaders. Inside the package is a gift of good humor, that we may laugh and fill ourselves with joy and wonder of all that is in this world. This is the humor of delight in our differences of appearance, beliefs, and idiosyncrasies. This is a gentle humor that lifts spirits, even in the toughest of times. Inside this package is the gift of community, that we may care for our neighbors and work together for the success of all, each in his or her own way. It is the gift of understanding that our differences, woven well together, create the strong fabric of good and strong community that can do anything. Here is my gift to you and to our city. With love, happy holidays.
So you have done it, dear City Club of Eugene. You've taken almost a full hour and received all of these wonderful gifts, cures from everything from myopia to being a bystander to gifts of a new school and swimming pool to balance in our city and a public eye. We truly have been enriched by these gifts received today. Happy holidays to all, and to all, goodbye.
We hope that the City Club will continue to give a venue for civic debate in the coming year. We don't always agree, and we shouldn't, but we should always be able to discuss our disagreements to build a better future. Thanks again to our sponsors, Sacred Earth Botanicals, KLCC, Gatos, Churnside, and Balthrop. We meet again in the new year, January 10th, at our new home, at the our new old home, at the Downtown Athletic Club on Willamette Street for our first 2014 program on the Oregon Values and Beliefs Survey. Quite appropriate given the season. Thank you very much.